Welcome to Season 3, Episode 1 of The Exchange, a coffee podcast where coffee people talk to coffee people about coffee and or things coffee adjacent. I'm Mike Ferguson, and for this episode, I'll be your host as we speak and sip coffee with...
Hi, my name is Todd Mackey, and my first job in coffee was as a barista.
Were you baristing?
If such a thing exists. Though I will say, I mean, my first barista job was, and all of my barista jobs, I should say, were in somewhat of a restaurant setting. Not a full service, like fine dining type of thing where we were doing like, you know, 10 to 15 drinks per shift. But it was not like a specialty coffee shop. Hey, everyone's coming in and ordering espressos and cappuccino type of thing.
But you were pulling shots.
I was pulling shots.
After dinner shots?
No, these were brunch, early morning, daytime, brunch, lunch, after lunch, pre-dinner on the way out of the office type of thing. And I was pulling shots on a La Marzocco Linea. An AV for those classic. keeping track. Yep. Fully manual. And yeah, I mean, that was my first coffee job.
And where was that?
That was at Olga's Cup and Saucer in Providence, Rhode Island.
Just down the street.
Down Point Street.
From where we are right now in beautiful downtown Providence.
That's right. We could walk to the location that was Olga's Cup and Saucer, rest in peace. I would guess, though you might move faster than me, I would guess we'd be there in 13 to 15 minutes time.
That's about right.
Okay.
So that's pretty interesting. All right, so we already sort of got into it, but wanting to talk about sort of your bio, your coffee bio.
Sure.
So your first job was as a barista?
Yeah.
But not in a coffee house, in a restaurant setting?
Yeah, well, it would be best described as a bakery. So So Olga's Cup and Saucer started as a seasonal bakery where Olga Bravo and Becky Wagner, Olga's partner, they both were makers, artists, and they would basically spend winters in this New England area making art and, you know, creating work. And then they had a seasonal spot out towards Tiverton. It was in Little Compton, if you know where that is. Mm-hmm. And it was this little spot where they would buy fresh produce and make awesome baked goods and do stuff like that. Then they eventually opened the Cup and Saucer in Providence, as it was known. Did you ever get to go there?
No, they closed during the pandemic.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, it had changed hands. They sold, and then the owner that took over decided to close. Though the location has since become a 7 stars bakery now.
Yeah, walked by it the other day. It was hopping.
Yeah, sure would. But yeah, it was a scratch bakery. They did, you know, sourdough breads and all sorts of really nice handmade food. And then we had a full lunch menu. And so, you know, that was the context. There was a lot of coffee. We made and served a lot of coffee, but it was a bakery.
Okay. So that was your first job in coffee. I want to circle back.
Okay.
And talk about why we decided to have you as the first guest on Season 3 of The Exchange. The reboot.
Yeah, tell me why. Why would you do that?
Well, because this used to be your show, along with
Mark. Wow.
And we decided. I thought it'd be sort of a nice passing of the torch, or maybe getting your blessing, or something. Because you and Mark did 2 seasons of The Exchange. We decided to keep the name because we wanted to, you know, ride on your success or however you say that. Cause we've got like over 30,000 listens.
That's incredible.
Isn't bad. Someone the other day sent us a note saying that the exchange, that those episodes, the first 2 seasons with you and Mark, with the most valuable resource that they had while they were preparing to open up their roasting company. Thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So wanted to leverage that and so keep all the branding in place. So that this is the easiest way. But the format is different. It's just me, at least right now. It's just me. And wanted to, the first interview to be one of the former hosts of The Exchange, Todd Matthew.
Okay. Okay. I see. Yeah, no, that's well, I appreciate you, you know, recognizing the lineage and history of the show. And yeah, certainly feel like there's a lot of potential to continue conversations that will add value to roasters of any size.
It's different than it was. We were doing The Exchange before with you guys. Mark was in California. You were in Providence. I was actually in Georgia for most of the two seasons. So we are in different locations and we weren't looking at each other.
Yeah, I feel like I'm wanting to giggle a lot more now that we're sitting across from each other.
Yes, I have to, you know,
pull it together.
Let's say that you have to look at me. and we're actually in a studio with like stuff on the walls.
Yeah. Yeah. And you put a hell of a lot of work into getting things set up. And I mean, I have to say the comfort quotient, if you will, of, you know, the recording situation here is well beyond. I mean, I have memories of recording episodes of the original Exchange, probably at almost midnight East Coast time.
Yes.
In my attic.
Right.
Like midsummer, just like pouring sweat as I'm trying to chastise Mark Inman for, you know, his many, many seasons in the field. But so tell me more. I mean, maybe this is not the direction you wanted to go out of the gate, but like, what is, you won't sit with every guest on the show in such a nice sort of intimate way here. You might have folks in to record. You might be recording people in interviews at distances. What is that going to look like?
It won't always be in studio. I mean, I'll always be in studio, but we've got some equipment here that makes it possible for people to call in.
Sure.
And makes it easier to make that all happen. And most of the time, though, I'll be here. Like you, I was sweating, except I was in my closet. We had a walk-in closet in Georgia. And so I was in among the clothing and listening to some of those episodes. One of the reasons I wanted to have the studio and asked if we could build it is because the sound quality, especially for my intros and outros, wasn't always great because my situation would change. And I still can't listen to some of those because the sound quality is not great. So I definitely wanted to do it right, or at least have the opportunity to do it right. Whether we'll do it right or not remains to be seen. But yeah, we can have people call in. We have people in. We're starting sort of with family. The first few guests will probably be with the Olam folks, like yourself, just because we've got so many resources in-house, people with lots of great experience that I think is relevant.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. So is it focused on, or do you imagine it to be at this stage? Because it can and will change, right? That's one thing we found doing the Exchange in the past. It was like kind of going where the value was identified, right?
Right.
But like, will it focus on people just sharing their direct experience and the ability for roasters of all shapes and sizes to access that through the podcast? Is that kind
of the confusion? I mean, the before was sort of our mission statement in the Exchange before was that it was information that roasters could use right now. So when you guys were talking, like the note we got from the roaster the other day saying the information was super practical and helpful, not sure that's what's going to happen this time. It's more, you know, it could change. There's a lot more room to be a lot more fluid and have a lot, you know, see what happens. I think the focus is more on the conversation and the individuals who we have. And it doesn't always have to be me. I'll be the host most often, but you know, our fearless leader, Rob Stevens, said that he wants to do a few, which is great.
Cool.
And, you know, you're more than welcome to sit in the chair.
We'll see what happens. Yeah.
Anytime. So we started talking sort of about your first job in coffee, circle back to get in sort of the passing of the torch thing. But let's go back to your coffee biography.
Okay.
Following Olga's What was next?
So at Olga's, I was preparing and serving coffee from a local roaster here in Providence, or in the Providence area, I should say. At the time in the Providence area, but they've since moved into Providence proper. That's New Harvest Coffee Roasters. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough, you know, at a point where it made sense. I was managing front of house at Olga's for a number of years, and then there was an opportunity to get involved with New Harvest. And my role, though everyone at the time at least would start by, you know, slinging beans, we called it, you know, in production. Packing coffee, filling orders, you know, everybody kind of went through the same onboarding process there, which I think was invaluable and really taught me a lot, you know, having never worked for a roaster to that point. But I came in through that pipeline to get into sales and training, you know, and this was really in the dawning stages of training as the new equipment, we would say, you know, and that's probably quotable from early episodes of The Exchange. So I went to work for a roaster, to teach people who were using the coffee that we were roasting how to better brew it, and training teams and staffs.
Sure. So, yeah. I remember the first time I heard someone say that training is the new equipment, I thought, man, that's so clever.
Yeah.
I wish I'd made that up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't honestly say with clarity, I can't look back and recall where I first heard it, but I know it wasn't me.
Yeah.
100%.
So slinging beans in the roastery, I'm thinking about new roasters where they're doing everything, where you're the owner of the company, you're roasting, you're packing, you're the delivery person. And how that evolves over time. When you were at New Harvest, how many people were working in the roastery?
Okay. I was at New Harvest for a number of years, and I would say that on average, we probably had in the roastery 6 to 8 people.
Yeah. So a good size.
Good size crew, multiple roasting machines running concurrently.
Oh, wow.
And then a number of production hands, various, you know, people managing, you know, paperwork incoming, outgoing, and physical deliveries. And and that also includes, you know, I mean, the reality was, even as a non-owner in a company that size, we were all doing a lot of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, while training was a focus, I mean, it was packing coffee, getting it out the door, you know, setting up the training lab and, you know, expanding the training lab, creating content, going and supporting sales, doing sales.
It's not like there were a lot of people, but when the truck was backing up to the dock, there wasn't a receiving manager
who
that person's job was.
There wasn't, I mean, most of the roles were not at a size where a full-time 40-hour week was doing one thing. Yeah. And I mean, I think that that was also something really special about that season, where, you know, everyone was kind of, it wasn't committee for everything, but it was involvement and transparency in most things. So, you know, brewing standards, we would brew lots of coffee together and trade notes. And a lot of those notes became the basis for things that I was teaching when I was in the field in cafes working with, you know, people who were using our coffee. Similarly, we were all cupping together. So, you know, the decision may have fallen to this person at this time, that person that time, you know, so-and-so for this particular coffee need or what have you. But everyone was there, or more or less everyone. And, you know, there was a lot of learning because of that.
And that's fun. Even my days at Batdorf and Bronson in Atlanta, there were days where I was packing coffee, you know, usually around the holidays. Mm. But if a truck was backing up and I was standing there, I'd receive the coffee. And that, it's good for if your attention span is not great.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. I mean, I have the first few months I was at New Harvest. I mean, it was, there was just a, I mean, it was a combination of just how simple and satisfying the work was, the sensory experience of packing coffee, you know, leaving the roastery smelling like roasted coffee. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, when full immersion in something that you're really excited about is what, you know, you're going for. I mean, yeah. I was just too excited. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Was able to learn a lot there over the years and grew quite a lot.
And then after that?
So towards the tail end of my time at New Harvest, I had I really fell in love with cupping, quality control, and wanted to get into green coffee. I had sort of identified that was going to be a big part of, you know, what I wanted to be. So I had made a shift in my own personal career vision and had laid out some new goals to support that. And on the list was becoming a Q grader, which I did towards the tail end of my time at New Harvest. Huh. And I had crossed paths with our now managing director, Mr. Robert Steven. So there was an opportunity at the time running a training business called Coffee Solutions, which had been bought by Inter-American Coffee. Mm-hmm. He was going over and working for their trading desk, and I took over, you know, that business unit and started doing all of the QA business that was going on, third party auditing, the training business, building curriculum. We were the North American training partner for ProBat Burns. Mm-hmm. And I was getting in the pipeline with Coffee Quality Institute to become a Q instructor as well.
So let's stop. First of all, earlier when I said Rob's name, did I say Stevens? Because I'm going to have to edit that out.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay, good. And also, what's a Q grader?
A Q grader is a vetted, calibrated cupper. So, I mean, you can, it's a program. Coffee Quality Institute is an industry resource organization that does a lot of harmonized in-country work, building capacities, working with governments and NGOs, you know, to build value around quality for stakeholders in the supply chain. Part of that is this Q program, which is basically calibrating the industry on all sides around cupping standards. And, you know,
it's sort of somebody else says, yeah, you can cup coffee.
Yeah. Or you can cup coffee similar to them.
Yeah.
Right. Or them, that person.
Somebody who's not sitting at your cupping table agrees that you know how to cup coffee.
Standardizing language. And I'm probably, because I sit so close to it or have at times, I probably think about it in a different way, where some would describe it as, yeah, it's the psalm for coffee. I mean, I think that is a relatable type of, you know, definitions, the sommelier kind of program for wine. It might be somewhat relatable to this. I don't think the main objectives of the Q compare to the main objectives, it would seem, for the psalm, but, sure. But I'm not a sommelier. So yeah. I can't really rightfully say, but the idea being, especially like in our business, you know, being able to dialogue around coffee quality internationally up and down the supply chain in a way that is relatable and not only relatable for conversation's sake, but to actually use it as building blocks to business.
Right. You know, we've talked about that before in the old exchange.
Yeah.
That around cupping scores. And it's nice if we're all using the same language and the same relative scores. And, you know.
Yeah.
So you're a Q grader, you're working for Coffee Solutions.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of roaster training. I started to like I said, we were the North American training partner for ProBat Burns roasters. So I did a lot of, you know, we had a lab with roasting equipment, taught a lot of roasters, learned a lot with a lot of new and existing roasters. Did a lot of consultation and, sort of specific special projects, worked on, you know, massive roasting equipment and on-site training roasters that you take, you know, staircases to get to the triers and, you know, that you're basically working somewhat like Homer Simpson in like a control tower, you know, so yeah, it was a really wild learning time. And at the same time, I was doing quite a lot of volunteering, both within the education programs for SCA, within, you know, CQI, and and also volunteering on the board leadership for those organizations, or I should say for the Specialty Coffee Association and the trade guilds within. Yeah, as my time came to a close there, I should also note that during that season is when, you know, I launched into a venture with a very good friend and business partner, starting a roaster ourselves called Bolt Coffee here in Providence. Though at that time, I mean, roasting wasn't even a consideration. It was a multi-roaster cafe, coffee bar, and, you know, that continued to expand. So there's a lot going on. And so during that time, we did that. We created a sister business called Need Donuts, doing, you know, delicious treats. At a point, I left Coffee Solutions and was hired by Olam Specialty Coffee.
Right. So, and today you're a coffee trader?
Yeah, yeah. I was hired with two objectives. One was to build purchasing and sales relationships, and then the other was to calibrate our specialty coffee team of cuppers in countries of origin where we're active, to basically use the tenets of the queue, more or less, to agree on what we're trying to separate at the most early stages, you know, when parchment is delivered to a bodega, or, you know, when we're at, like, you know, purchasing outposts in the field, basically being able to have folks there who totally agree with and understand and can identify coffees based on, like, what this market was looking for.
So, right.
And so that was really cool.
These days, there's a lot more Q graders at Origin than there were.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think even in the days that I'm referring to, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, the queue hadn't made it these places. I think that it's just, the reality is that it's not like a one-time, like, accolade. You don't, like, win the race one time and then, you know, you can hang your hat on it. It does. But that's the same with anything, I think, you know, anything that's more of a discipline. And then obviously, like, we ourselves physically, I mean, we change over time, and so our perceptions would. I think anyone who's really making a big dent in the hard work is continuing to do that. But yeah, we wanted to see more Q graders within our team. I was not certifying our own team. I mean, I could never do that for conflict of interest. Right. But we were just getting together, and so, for example, myself and then our head of quality, who is now in the trade as well, Josh Marchaud out in Healdsburg, he and I traveled to Kampala. We got all of our cuppers from all of East Africa together. And, you know, we ran 3 days of calibration to basically say, hey, you know, this in these countries for these reasons, this is what we're looking for.
Right.
And you know, that's what represents value to customers who are trying to achieve ABC or XYZ.
Yeah.
So it was really cool.
But these days your job is mostly trader.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I do.
What's sort of the job description?
I have always said, when offered the opportunity, though it's been a while in the pandemic context, but when offered the opportunity to say, you know, what's the job like, or how do you feel like you can be good at it, is for me, it's listening. And I just feel like I try to be curious, ask good questions, and listen to what roasters are looking for, need, or value. And then the same, I try to have similarly curious and engaging relationships with producers, producer groups, exporters, people upchain. And, you know, my job is successful when I can pair people together and they want to keep working together every year.
So what's a day in the life for a trader?
A lot of spreadsheets, a lot of sort of macroeconomic awareness mm-hmm. and a lot of, yeah, hobnobbing, just making phone calls and a lot of email and back and forth texts, just checking in with people, mm-hmm. hearing how things are going, making sure that people are aware what their options are for, you know, coffees mm-hmm. based on quality versus price, you know, supply, like, you know, making sure a significant percentage, especially in the last couple of years, has been, you know, answering the question, where's my coffee?
Mm-hmm.
Why is my coffee not where I hope it to be?
Yeah, that sort of leads me to what's been the most challenging aspect of being a trader over the last 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, just the combination of the global logistics crisis mm-hmm. and then also just how volatile all aspects of, you know, green coffee purchasing have been, you know, the futures market, which regardless of whether we're using it as an index for, you know, a direct index for our purchasing, like, you know, differentially based pricing or not, it's affecting things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even flat price coffees that quote, do not use the C,
right,
you know, they're impacted more or less directly by those factors. You know, you have volatility in currencies, you have conflict in Russia, Ukraine, other mm-hmm. key parts of the world. And, you know, all of these things as they affect trade and commodities and fuel and fertilizers and all these different things. I mean, it's all, you know, compounding as it relates to the job.
In 2016, we surveyed our customers, and over again, the one thing that customers wanted that was most important to them was knowing when their coffee would be here.
Yeah.
And that was long ago, before pandemics or logistic problems. So I imagine if that was top of mind for most of our customers in 2016, that the last 2 years have been super challenging.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine that to some, it'd be relatable to say that, you know, the clenched, you know, grip on, hey, where's my coffee? When's it going to be here? It's mm-hmm. probably, it's been eased, but not willingly.
Right.
You know, like, I think we collectively seem to hold that less tightly, mm-hmm. but not by choice. It's just been ripped from our hands.
Right. Yeah. We've been forced to adjust our expectations.
For sure.
Yeah. So that's the most challenging things for you as a trader over the last 2 years. For your customers as roasters, what's been most challenging? The same thing? I would
imagine that those things have been really challenging. I also think, you know, roasters have had the, you know, the less predictability in their own markets, you know, where lots of bakeries, retailers, you know, shops of all kinds have been dramatically impacted in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, their business, how COVID has changed the retail landscape, you know, shifts in product makeup and where, you know, roasters are selling successfully, you know, even if it's changed for the better, it's mm-hmm. change is still very hard to deal with. So I think, you know, in a way, it's, you know, I've been very grateful to be in like a business to business type role day to day, you know, where we're able to have as intelligent conversations as we can, you know, using what we do see. Granted, it's changing so fast that sometimes that feels, you know, like the wind's blowing different directions all the time. But yeah, through the roaster lens and, you know, being a part of one, though tangentially, in like a day to day, I mean, there's just been a lot of change to what you can expect and then how you can base those decisions, whether purchasing or budgeting, you know, and so growth in any way, whether staffing levels, you know, purchasing levels, you know, product mix, all that kind of stuff has been affected pretty dramatically.
We've seen roasters becoming some of the most creative business people.
Yeah. I think you'll if people don't celebrate that fact now, then in 5 or 10 years or whatever it takes to get to more or less a you know, sort of boring stasis again.
Yeah.
Right. You'll have people that will probably miss this time for that creativity.
Right.
Right. Yeah, even though it doesn't feel good now.
Yeah. Winding things down.
Sure.
Wrapping things up. If you could go back in time and give some advice to Todd Mackey in his first day as a coffee person, as a barista, what would that advice be?
I mean, I think in our mentors episode in season one around Thanksgiving, I probably shared a few anecdotal things that had been shared with me that really have stuck.
Feel free to repeat those now. Are you going to force people to?
I'm
going
to force people to go back and listen to the episode. No, I mean, you asked a different question. What would I tell myself? I think if anything, and this probably is coffee, you know, it could be related to coffee. It might also just be related to being an ambitious person and trying to, you know, falling in love with an industry and wanting to like make a place and find, you know, what fits well for, for yourself. But I think if anything, I would remind myself is just take the time to do things right. I feel like I have been fortunate where that was, a value that was instilled both like familially, you know, early in life, but also, you know, for key people that I was looking up to from a professional standpoint, but you know, good things don't get built overnight, but they don't blow away in the wind. And, you know, I feel like that truth has been demonstrated over and over again. And certainly as it relates to what I'm doing now, where the relationships that, you know, are really key to what I get to do season after season, they're, you know, they're galvanized through slow, steady investment.
Yeah.
You know,
great. Mr. Mackey, I want to thank you for being my first guest. Super helpful to me. As you know, I tend to get stage fright in front of the microphone. So it helped a lot to have a familiar face.
Yeah.
I'm here for the first episode. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think you're going to do great. This was awesome.
Cool. Well, I'll see you outside the studio in a few minutes.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, right. Mike.
You've been listening to The Exchange, a coffee podcast coming to you from our coffee podcast studio in beautiful downtown Providence, Rhode Island. The Exchange is produced and edited by me, Mike Ferguson. Our opening theme was A Cup of Coffee and a Piece of Pie by the Ribeye Brothers. Our closing theme is Coffee Morning by Olga Scotland. All music is used under Creative Commons. Thanks again to our guests, Todd Mackey. And now, a tradition here at The Exchange, your postscript.
So, what constitutes a job in coffee?
What's just you saying what constitutes my first job?
What constitutes a job in coffee? Like, I guess, like, I'm overthinking saying, hi, I'm Todd Mackey, and my first job in coffee was barista. But that's not, like I have to say that differently. I'm not, like, I was not barista-ing. That's not a thing. Was as a barista.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would do it. I just think it's so great that I have, that now I have a recording of Todd Mackey overthinking.
You're welcome.